Now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Testing, testing, check, check, check.
Hello there, this is funny lady Judith Lucy.
Hi, this is Joel Creasy.
Hey, this is Fiona O'Loughlin.
Hi guys, McLaughlin here, that would be of the Craig variety.
Hi, this is Shayna Blaze.
Hello, this is Tom Ballard.
Hi, this is Melissa Capp.
G'day, this is ScoMo, Scott Morrison.
Hi, this is Reece Nicholson.
Hi, it's Gina Liano from The Real Housewives of Melbourne.
Hi, this is Reece Mastin.
This is Kathy Griffin.
Hey, this is Todd Collin.
Hello, this is Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to
The Troy Murphy Show.
Troy Murphy laughing at me in the other studio. Oh, he's dancing to my radio vet. Hello, Troy.
He's ready for his close-up. It's the Troy Murphy Show.
Ladies, gentlemen, them, they, and all, welcome to the Troy Murphy Show. I am, of course, your host, Troy Murphy, and this, as the name suggests, is the Troy Murphy Show. Yes, that's right. It's the glorious time of the week, Thursday nights at 6 p.m, when the Troy Murphy Show graces the 2SSR bandwidth and airwaves for an exciting adventure of talk till 7 p.m. as we look at the weird, wacky, and wonderful news from home and abroad that happened this week, as well as some of the more, well, serious news stories that we all need to know, you know, all so we can be functioning adults and stuff. Big thank you to BJ and Grozy for taking on the first hour of drive. Welcome to back to 2SSR, boys. Welcome back. Oh, funny news. Funny news, personal story time. Always do it at the beginning of the show. You know, it's one of those little radio practices that we're encouraged to do. So you as the listening audience get to know me personally. So I've been back on radio for 15 weeks. Like BJ and Grozy, I am a new return to the station, and this is the 15th show back. Woohoo! Big 15th show back. I haven't been kicked off air yet, but this week I received my first hate comment on social media. What? People hate me? Why did it take so long? I must have been playing it safe. But the weird thing is the comment was under a post I made 10 weeks ago after my 5th show, when I interviewed our local member for Cook, who also happens to be the former Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. The comment reads, I quote, "Yuck, why is this in my feed? A homophobic Jesus twit who really well presents how not to do anything when in an important role, ... trillions of dollars in debt, and most likely to go to prison for their corruption and lack of governance, ... thinking this horrible example of humanity as a good idea to interview is revolting and deeply offensive. He's an enemy of the LGBTIQ plus community, and now it appears so are you." Clutch the pearls. I've been called an enemy of the LGBTIQ plus community. You know, I've been called many things in my time working in the media, but to be called an enemy of the LGBTQI plus community because I interviewed the local federal member on the local radio station about a community event raising money for local charity takes the cake. That's what the post was. It was the interview with ScoMo about a charity event happening in Cronulla that he was organising to raise money for local charity. I don't think the guy pressed play or even read the caption. We live in a world now where people feel as though it's acceptable and it's their right to hurl hate, make false accusations, ignore content subject matter, and project feeling over the consideration of what is fact. It doesn't matter if you like the former Prime Minister Scott Morrison or not. It doesn't matter if you like me or not. An interview is an interview. And when the topic is promoting a community event that raises money for charity, all bias gets put aside. And to be accused of being an enemy of the LGBTI plus community for doing an interview, my accuser needs a reality check. Not that I expect anyone to know what I've done in my lengthy career in media, But to call me an enemy of the community that I am part of is laughable. Anyway, let's move on. As we go to a celebration of the day. Yes, we're doing a bit of yin and yang. The yang, the negative of social media comments being posted blindly without understanding what you're commenting about. To the celebration, the good, the happy. As always here on the Troy Murphy Show, every day is a celebration. As today, the second day of the month of February in the year 2023, we celebrate Brown Dog Day. Yes, a day to celebrate cute and cuddly brown dogs. Not all dogs, just the brown ones. Yeah. That's got a bit of a race. Is that, has that got racial undertones to it? I don't know. I know there is no race in color of dog. I'm just having fun. All right. No, it is Brown Dog Day and we're celebrating it today, which brings us to this week's top five as being Brown Dog Day. We do the top five celebrity brown dogs throughout history, starting with number five.
Five.
You can't go past Santa's little helper from The Simpsons.
Four.
Slink from Toy Story.
Okay, I got some good news and I got some bad news.
What news?
Good news is I found your hat, Woody.
My hat? Oh, Slink, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Where'd you find it?
Well, that's the bad news.
Three.
Scooby-Doo from Scooby-Doo.
Run and hide. Run, boy. Run, boy. Run, boy. Yuck.
Two.
Technically brown, although a little bit mixed color. Toto from The Wizard of Oz.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
One.
And as this is my top five, it is heavily biased. So at number one is Rolf the Dog from The Muppets.
You may not know this, but I'm really a very sentimental dog. I cry easily. Onions, for instance, always make me cry. I'll admit, I split bananas, take Easter eggs, and make them die. But I never harmed an onion, so why should they make me cry?
On the show this week, it's back to school for students across the Shire and, of course, the state. And we've got an expert on the show coming up very soon. In fact, coming up next to tell us what it's like to go back to school this week. Yep. An expert. We'll also talk about the protest movement at Cardinal George Pell's funeral in the city today and the problem with power in Australia. We'll deep dive into that, plus our weekly regulars, local Shire news, have your say, some of the strange news stories that you may have missed this week, plus so much more. And with that, let's dive headfirst into this week's show without any safety gear on, of course, because that's how we do things here on the Troy Murphy Show, responsibly. Don't try this at home.
It seems today that all you hear is music on the radio and murder on podcasts. But where are those good old-fashioned talk shows on which we used to rely? Lucky there's a Troy Murphy Show. Lucky there's a man who positively can do all the things that make us tune in live.
Never miss a show. Listen on demand. Click the Troy Murphy Show on the 2SSR.com.au homepage program guide.
Ponder this. you can mix a lot of wasabi into guacamole before it becomes visibly noticeable. Ooh, what a fun party trick. Now for a quick check of the weather. Tomorrow, Friday, a sunny day with tops of 30 degrees. The weekend, Saturday, sunny with tops of 29. Sunday, mostly sunny and 27. With Monday of next week as we all go back to work, partly cloudy with top temperatures of 27 degrees.
The Troy Murphy Show, driving you home Thursday nights from 6 p.m.
File this next segment under Back to School Across the Shire. The big breaking news this week, school went back. Now, of course, as always, there can be two truths, as school going back is both good news and bad news, depending on what angle you look at it from. For me, having no kids, it's neither. But it's also good news and it's also bad news. So really, that's three truths. It's good because it means that parents with kids and kids aren't everywhere you go. And it's bad news for me because I had a lot of fun catching up with my nieces whilst they were on holidays. And to celebrate this good and bad news story and the return to school for all the kids across the Shire and beyond, who better to talk to than with someone who is of lived experience when it comes to going back to school? And that expert, ladies and gentlemen, is none other than my adorable niece, my little fun chicken, Miss Hallie Murphy, who is on the phone right now. Hallie, remind your Uncle Doy how old you are now.
Six.
You're 6 years old?
Yeah.
And what year are you now at school?
Year one.
Year one? Oh my goodness. And when did you go back to school? What day?
Tuesday.
On Tuesday. So a couple of days back to school. You enjoying being back at school?
Yeah.
Yeah? Is it more enjoyable being back at school or did you enjoy being on holidays more?
Both.
What did you get up to in the holidays that was fun?
A lot of stuff.
Like?
I forget.
And what do you love about being back at school? What's your favourite thing to do at school?
It is to colour in.
Colour in? What do you like colouring in?
Like the stuff that we colour in and doing, like, we do this, like, it's called spoken thing, and yeah. I love it. We do it in the morning.
What does that do? What do you do with that?
So spoken is on the TV, and then like it's a little board, and we guess the thing, and we do it on our Sharpie boards.
Well, that sounds like fun. And Do you have lots of friends at school?
Yep.
Yeah. What are their names?
Alana, Emma, Elena, Annie, Sophie, Flynn, Bonnie, Matilda, Odie.
Oh my goodness. You've got a lot of friends, Hallie.
Talia, Evie, Scarlett, Isabel.
That's a lot of friends. Annie. Oh, it keeps going. All right, yeah.
And that's all.
Let's talk about school. Are you happy to be back at school?
Yes.
Are you excited to come home each day and see your baby brother and your little sister?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. Do you tell them all about your day when you get home?
Yeah.
Do you reckon they'll have as much fun as you do when they go to school eventually?
Yes.
And the big question, so, you know, the important questions for someone who's just started year one, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to work for Papa.
Oh, in Papa's shop?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Papa, where does Papa work?
In Sutherland.
Yeah, what does he do there?
He sells paint.
And you want to sell paint too?
Yeah.
Has he shown you around the shop before? Has he shown you how to mix paint and put it in the big shaker?
Yeah.
Has he let you do that yet?
No.
Oh,
but he has let me push the buttons.
Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting. And what else do you do at the paint shop when you're there with Papa?
We scan stuff.
Yep.
We scan like heaps of things.
Oh, nice. Well, next time you're up there, you'll have to ask Papa
to let you mix the paint colours.
Okay.
Well, Hallie, thank you so much for chatting.
You're welcome.
And there you have it. Back to school is fun for young Hallie Murphy, who returned to school this week here in the show. I can't believe how grown up she's sounding, especially on the phone. Oh, they grow up too quickly, don't they? Too quickly! And to everyone else going back to school or sending their kids back to school, I hope you all had a great first week. Stick around, because coming up next, it's been a very busy week in the news, and we deep dive into some of the stories that you may have missed.
Stay tuned. More from The Troy Murphy Show coming up right after this.
2SSR can help you promote your business with an innovative and inexpensive marketing plan. Our in-house team will help you design a campaign, voice the audio, and give it the professional production values you need. To find out more, call us on 9545 1800 or email info@2SSR.com.au to organise a talk with our experienced marketing team.
Hi, it's Kale. Hope you can join me for Friday Night Live every Friday from 7 to 9pm for a mix of pop and indie music, interviews with interesting people, and all the music and entertainment news from the Shire, Sydney and beyond. Friday Night Live, 7pm on 2SSR 99.7 FM. I'll see you there.
2SSR FM 99.7. Never miss a beat. Follow The Troy Murphy Show Facebook page. Search The Troy Murphy Show.
Ponder this. The end of 2023 will be 12/31/23 or 1/2/3/1/2/3. Now for a quick look at what's on in the Shire. Do you want to learn how to make your own natural skincare products but don't know where to start? Sutherland Shire Council is hosting a hands-on workshop that will show you how to treat your skin and hair using the best natural ingredients. You must be a Sutherland Shire resident to attend, and for more information, contact Libraries on 97100351. And for more What's On in the Shire, head to the Shire What's On page on the 2SSR.com.au website.
The Troy Murphy Show, driving you home Thursday nights from 6pm.
Let's take a look at the news you may have missed this week. With a 24-hour news media cycle, it is hard to keep on top of it all, but we never miss a beat here on The Troy Murphy Show, so we can keep you informed. Like the news that broke this week that the dodo, you know, the extinct bird, is coming back. Well, maybe. It's been approximately 361 years since anyone's seen a dodo. But a company called Colossal Biosciences have already successfully sequenced the extinct bird's genome and is planning on bringing the dodo back to the world. Did we not learn anything from Jurassic Park? Did we not learn anything indeed? Why would you bring an... Well, okay, the dodo is a very unique looking bird. But from all accounts, because, you know, I wasn't there 361 years ago when the dodo bird was around, it wasn't a very smart bird, and that's why dodo is synonymous with stupid. And why would you bring it back to a world that killed it already? I don't know. Maybe there'll be things in place to, you know, put it in zoos or protect it for some reason. It is a pretty cool looking bird. I would like to see one in person, but I don't know. I'm a little bit hesitant about bringing things that are gone back. Maybe I'm too influenced by what I see on Hollywood or in Hollywood. Also in the news this week, a second tax increase in 6 months is about to hit Australian beer drinkers. Yep, if you enjoy beer, it's about to get more expensive. With the brewing industry warning the price of a drink could soon hit $12. $12 for a beer. I actually don't drink beer, so I don't even know what it costs now or has cost in the past. Australian beer taxes are now rising at the fastest rate in more than 30 years, and we are now the fourth highest in the world when it comes to the cost of beer. The 3.7% tax increase, which affects draft as well as packaged beer, comes on top of a 4% increase in August. Whatever the government does, don't touch my wine, please. Now for Victoria, plastic straws, plates, cutlery and drink stirrers have now been banned as a part of a bid to reduce the amount of rubbish sent to landfill. Coffee cups, lids and standard plastic takeaway containers are not included in the single-use plastic ban due to concerns there are not enough viable alternatives. Individuals who sell, distribute or supply banned items can be fined $370 and businesses can face a penalty of $1,849. If the dispute heads to court, individuals could be forced to pay more than $11,000 and businesses more than $55,000. They're taking it somewhat serious down there in Victoria. So let's look at that. Plastic straws, plates, cutlery and drink stirrers. All banned. Oh, and good news this week, you may have missed this one. For the first time since 2012, all five Spice Girls could reunite ahead of King Charles's three-day coronation celebration. The pop icons of Spice Girls are set to reunite for a blockbuster royal concert to mark the coronation of King Charles III this May. Sources have revealed the band... Are they a band, the pop group, including Victoria Beckham, who we all know doesn't really want to do much with them anymore, could take the stage as a five-piece for the first time since the 2012 Olympics closing ceremony. Here's a quote. Royal organisers are super keen to secure Britain's biggest girl band, and the Spice Girls are seriously pondering a return to the stage as a five-piece for such a historical event, an insider told The Sun. Ooh! And in weird, strange news this week, there are reports that a couple left their baby at an airport check-in after they refused to buy a ticket for their young child. The couple in question attempted to board a Ryanair flight from Tel Aviv to Brussels, but they hadn't bought a ticket for their baby. The parents with Belgian passports refused to pay for a ticket when asked and appeared to have their baby in a stroller when they walked past and through passport control, according to the Jerusalem Post. However, as they walked past passport control... They seemingly left their child in the stroller and attempted to board the flight without the child. Airport staff noticed what the couple had done and contacted the police, who then found them and took them in for questioning. According to Israel Airport Authority, the couple arrived late to Terminal 1 in Tel Aviv after the check-in counter had closed. They quickly wanted to go and deal with security so that they could board their flight and simply left their baby on the conveyor belt at the area. It's a confusing report, but I guess the gist of it is they didn't want to pay for the baby. They were late for their flight, so they left their baby at an airport so they could make their flight. Dem got some screws loose. And finally, a food service director for an impoverished South Suburban School District in the US is accused of stealing $1.5 million worth of food, mainly chicken wings, according to court documents. District funds were used to pay for the food, according to prosecutors, who did not reveal what became of the chicken wings. The scheme was uncovered by the district's business manager during a routine mid-year audit. The manager found the district was $300,000 over its annual food service budget, despite only being halfway through the school year. Oh! Terrible, but I really want to know what became of those chicken wings. Nearly $1.5 million worth of chicken wings. That's a lot of chicken wings. I wonder what the resale value for black market chicken wings goes for. Coming up next, oh, it's rant time. We talk the protest of Cardinal George Pell's funeral. That's next.
Stay tuned. More from The Troy Murphy Show coming up right after this.
Would you like to be involved in your local not-for-profit radio station? Would you like to become a 2SSR volunteer with the opportunity to be a presenter, provide office support or help with community events? If you would like to be part of the 2SSR family, call us on 9545 1800 or go to our website 2SSR.com.au and click on membership to download the application form.
Hey guys, Kieran here with the Antiques and Alternate Show, playing the Aussie alt and older antique songs. Join me 6 to 7 p.m. Fridays for a bit of fun and a fresh new quiz every week. Tune in then.
It's time now for Sutherland Shire Local News.
In Sutherland Shire Local News, Menai Fire Station has welcomed a new tanker as part of the Fire and Rescue New South Wales fleet. The $530,000 tanker will enable firefighters to access bushfires in difficult terrain, as well as be used for structural fires, rescues and other emergency incidents. Also in local news, the New South Wales government have installed more than 4,600 menstrual hygiene product dispensers across public schools as students return to learning in 2023. The free dispensers will support young women overcome barriers in accessing menstrual hygiene products. The Shire's new Pavilion Performing Arts Centre in Sutherland has seen over 1,200 people attend its opening performance of Waru Journey of a Small Turtle by the Baranga Dance Theatre. The pavilion opened its doors for the first time after a $41 million renovation over the weekend. And finally, in Sutherland Shire local news, the Shark Island Swim is back for its 33rd year. The annual swim will take place this Sunday, February 5, starting at the Cronulla Surf Life Saving Club. The event is open to everyone who can safely swim the distance with pre-registration required. The event kicks off at dawn. And that's what's happening in Sutherland Shire local news.
Catch up with all the latest news from The Troy Murphy Show. Visit www.thetroymurphyshow.com.
Ponder this. Daylight only becomes broad daylight if a crime is committed in it. Quick check of the weather. Tomorrow, Friday, a sunny day with tops of 30 degrees. The weekend, Saturday, sunny with tops of 29. Sunday, mostly sunny, 27. With Monday of next week, as we all go back to work, partly cloudy with top temps of 27 degrees.
The Troy Murphy Show. Driving you home, Thursday nights from 6 p.m.
Brace yourself. This is going to be a little bit of a rant because on the show tonight, I want to talk about the protest group Community Action for Rainbow Rights. This is the group of activists here in Sydney who protested George Pell's funeral today. I want to talk about what a low act I think that is and how that's going to do damage to the greater LGBTIQ plus community here in Australia, and how these people do not represent
the community that they say they represent, and that all people, media included, should not align the two together whatsoever. But first, a little bit of background on this group. The group are currently known as Community Action for Rainbow Rights. They were formerly known as Community Action Against Homophobia. And they're also loosely tied with another group called Pride in Protest. They seem to be all the same members, but they just wear different hats and rebrand when it suits. I know of reasons why I think they've had name changes and rebranding. I don't know for sure. I don't have the actual facts on that, but it is my belief that the rebranding of this group from Community Action Against Homophobia to Community Action for Rainbow Rights is because the previous names were tainted by bad behaviour from its members. And this group had been a bane in the sight of the LGBTI community for years, going back to the same-sex marriage debate. In fact, I remember I was working in the media at the time, and this group were, well, they were included as part of the movement for change, for the yes vote. But after going to a few of the rallies, the more sensible activists going for change kind of put them at arm's length because of their horrible language and behaviour that they were taking to their protests that they were setting up. It was terrible. But they, like I said, they've been a bane in the sight of the LGBTI community for years. And in fact, they've been trying. Here's some news that's not being reported by the media. They've been trying to hijack the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras for years to turn it into an extension of their activist group and move it away from the globally recognised institution that it is today. The group Community Action for Rainbow Rights, aka Pride in Protest, aka Community Action Against Homophobia, as a group, well, they've been plagued in the past with allegations of racism from within its own ranks, with accusations of bullying from its group leaders by former members who have come out and publicly addressed this, but the group have not addressed this publicly in return. Like I said, they rebrand, and I believe they rebrand to bury past discrepancies, to hide their true skeletons in their closet, a closet they hope not to come out of. But for some of us, we will always remember. And when they do ratbag things like they did today, protesting a funeral, we'll speak about it. This progressive group, in my mind, are not very progressive at all. They're an angry bunch of people with accusations of being racist and bullies. But this self-elect group, this self-elect activist group, Community Action for Rainbow Rights, who claim, without being appointed, to be the group who speaks out for the LGBTI community and the community rights here in Australia, do so without consulting the community first. This ratbag group are the ones who protested today at the funeral of the Australian Cardinal of the Catholic Church, George Pell. Now, let me get this out at the beginning. I am no fan of George Pell. He has actively campaigned against LGBTI rights for years. For years. The LGBTI community, which I am a member of, and he was also accused of historical child sexual abuses. That all happened in 2019, where he spent more than a year in jail before the High Court overturned the decision in 2020. I am not a fan of the man, not whatsoever. But I don't want to get into the historical allegations in this rant, because that's a whole different can of worms that I'm not prepared to open today. It's in my belief that you'd find it hard to find a member of the LGBTI community who supports George Pell. He's not liked. But you'd also be hard to find a majority of the LGBTI community who think that protesting at his funeral is a good idea. Well, at least members of the community who have lived experience and can think things through, think of the consequence of actions. You see, Community Action for Rainbow Rights are made up of a group of young activists, and I'm sure they have the best intentions at heart, but what they don't have is lived experience. You know, lived experience, so you make sound and better judgment ahead of doing something like protesting a funeral, that will set precedent and will have backlash on the community that they say they represent. Let's deep dive into this, but to do so, we need to take a trip back in history. The time when mistakes were made and we learned from them so we did better in the future. Back in the early 2000s, we saw the rise of the religious group or family cult that was built around its patriarch, Fred Phelps. It was called the Westboro Baptist Church. I'm sure when I say that, you get visual images. Visual images of signs that they used to make and protest. Signs like God hates fags and death penalty for fags. They'd go and picket funerals. And they were relentless. And they did this daily. And they would travel all over the United States to picket the funerals of gay victims of murder or gay bashings, as well as those of people who had died from complications related to AIDS. It also picketed other events related to homosexuality. They also picketed things like the funerals of the victims of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, as well as military funerals. They were a radical group of obnoxious zealots. And I'm drawing a comparison to the Community Action for Rainbow Rights group. Once the leader died in 2014, the Westboro Baptist Church, well, they fizzled away. But after that, there was a collective mindset globally that determined that it was not okay to protest funerals. In fact, here in Australia, it is against the law to disrupt a funeral, whether it's a secular funeral or a religious funeral. You run the risk of a $10,000 fine. Now, we all know why Community Action for Rainbow Rights is protesting the funeral today. But what I want to ask is, have they thought this through? Have Community Action for Rainbow Rights thought of the precedent that their actions set today? And the future consequence that this brings on the LGBTI community as a whole in Australia that they say they represent? To that question, I say no. Here are my thoughts on this. Firstly, it's never okay to protest a funeral. The person is dead. You have no effect on their life by protesting. You just annoy and aggravate those who are there to grieve the loss of a family member or friend. By protesting, you make enemies of those people they're grieving. And that is not what the LGBTI community is about. Year on year, we've had Mardi Gras festivals where the themes were focused around love. Showing love, spreading love, sharing love, inviting love. That's how we won same-sex marriage. We brought people on the journey with us. We didn't make enemies of those who thought differently. We educated them. That's how a civilized society works. And speaking of this, and back to this protest, just on a side note, I don't get it. What's the purpose? A protest... is to protest change. How is protesting a dead man and his actions going to make change? It's not. When you protest a funeral, you set a precedent that says, and this is where it's dangerous, if we don't like you, we will protest your funeral in the name of the LGBTI community in Australia, even though the LGBTI community of Australia have not collectively or in a majority said that it's okay to do so in our name, which is something I want to look at further in a second. But before I do, once you set a precedent of protesting a funeral, you invite others to do the same. There will be retaliation by opposing activist groups. Did they not think this through? Where is their common sense? As for the LGBTI community in Australia, let's take a look at the figures and then marry that up with the figures of support that this activist group have. As for the LGBTI community in Australia, let's look at the figures. On average in Australia, and I'm using outdated numbers here, so I'm certainly underrepresenting the statistics here because there was no question in the most recent census about the LGBTI community. So we don't know how many of us there are of 2022 when the, was it 2022 when this last census was done? Anyway, what we do know is that there are 26,260,198 people who live in the country of Australia as of Sunday, January 29 in 2023, based on the Worldometer elaboration of the latest United Nations data. Now, the last time the stats were done on the LGBTI community was in 2016, where it was believed that there was 3% of the Australian population were gay, lesbian, bisexual, and other sexual minority identities. Some researchers at the time believed it to be higher at 5.4%. So let's go with a lower number, 3.4% of the Australian population. And if my maths is correct, and maths is not a strong point of mine, then 3.4% of the population of Australia is something like 787,000 people, possibly. That's people who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, and any sexual, any other sexual minority identity. So you'd think with that number of Australians who identify under the rainbow umbrella, you'd think that, you know, to go and protest in the name of the Australian LGBTI community, you'd have to have a fair amount of support for your activist group to do so. Makes sense, right? That's, yeah, yeah. You're going to protest in the name of a group, a large group, you'd have their support. That's common sense, isn't it? Well, on the Community Action for Rainbow Rights Facebook page, when I checked it last night, there were 314 people interested in going to their protest and only 146 people saying that they were going to protest, going to go to the protest of George Pell's funeral. And if you've ever worked with social media and Facebook events, you'd know that if 146 people say they're going, less than half turn up. Now, as for the page itself, they have 9,600 followers. I will confess, I do follow them, but I hate follow them, much like I am sure a number of people who follow the page. In fact, I know that's a fact. I know there are many people who follow their page because, you know, they just want to see what crazy antics they're doing because we don't agree with it. But for me, even if all 9,000 Facebook followers on their page were all active, supporting members, that number is nowhere near the numbers reflective of the total LGBT community in Australia. Not enough to say that you speak and protest on the behalf of a community's rights. Community Action for Rainbow Rights, you do not speak for the LGBTI community. Your extreme protest radical beliefs have been voted down time and time and time again by the community you pretend to represent. I've been there at the meetings. It's time to pack up because you do not speak for the community. You are only hurting our community and you are about to do damage to our community with what you've done today. We have World Pride starting here in Sydney in less than a month. Did you at any stage stop to consider the backlash World Pride is going to get because of your decision to protest a dead man's funeral? Use your brains. People in the wider community who are not part of the LGBTI community will connect the two. Your protest at a funeral and World Pride here in Sydney, even though the two are not linked, because both are said for the LGBTI community. One is agreed that it's for the community. Your one isn't. Shame on you for the precedent you have set with this. Shame on you for the public damage you will cause. And shame on you for reversing years and years of hard work of people in our community who have successfully achieved change and equality. Something your ratbag group will never do. Now, like I said before, this is in no way a rant about protest. Protest can be effective. Why I support the thousands of colourful ribbons that were attached to the cathedral's gates, I think last night in Sydney. Sadly, I think they were taken down, and also the gates at the church in Albury. Those were put up in memory of those who suffered sexual abuse by clerics. This is a protest done right. But physically protesting a funeral with a rally, with signs set up to disrupt the event, is one of the lowest acts of disrespect. Well done, Community Action for Rainbow Rights, for stooping to the low depths of scum that is and was the Westboro Baptist Church. You're no better than them, and you never will be. What a shameful act. I hope you get banned from being involved in the World Pride, because there is no pride in what you do, only shame. You do not speak on behalf of the community you pretend to represent. What you do represent is a series of dangerous ideals. And what you do is tack on your sexuality onto the back of that to try and boost it, with no care in the world for those in the community you hurt and damage along the way. Grow up, do better. Rant over.
Stay tuned. More from The Troy Murphy Show coming up right after this.
Keeping it smooth in the Shire for over 20 years. Paul E. Routledge and Smooth Jazz. Will Downey. Gerald Albright. Brand new heavies. Paul E. Routledge and Smooth Jazz. Sunday, 6 p.m. for The Drive Home on FM 99.7.
The Troy Murphy Show. Driving you home Thursday nights from 6 p.m.
Let's put our serious hats on for this next segment as we file it under Damned If We Do. Let me read a report that was published on the ABC website. Australia is adding renewable energy less than half the pace required to replace retiring coal-fired generation and meet its own 2030 climate targets, one of the country's top energy experts says. In a wake-up call for state and federal governments, the University of New South Wales said that there was a mismatch between Australia's renewable energy ambitions and the reality on the ground. The warning comes after a pivotal year in which the closure dates for many of the country's biggest coal-fired power plants were fast-tracked, in some cases by decades. That means we're getting rid of all of our current sources of power faster than what we're replacing them with. Which means, and I've spoken about this ad nauseam, this means that we're set for power shortages in the future. That means no aircon in the summer, no heaters in the winter, no TV at night, no internet, no phones, nothing that requires power. And all you have to do is look over the pond to the UK, where they're now paying their customers, or their citizens, to not use power. A report online reads, for several hours this week and throughout the rest of summer, UK residents can earn money by turning lights off and unplugging laptops and using microwaves to heat their dinner instead of cooking it on an electric oven. National Grid, the UK's electricity system operator, is teaming up with energy companies to offer payments via energy bills to customers who use less electricity during certain, and in quotations, saving sessions. That's what they're calling it, saving sessions. These windows of time fall during peak hours of peak electricity demand, like in the mornings and in the evenings, and when people prepare for or return from work or watch television at night or turn on lights and electric heaters to cook and warm themselves or cool themselves. Last week, the saving session fell between 4:30 p.m. and 6 p.m. Could you imagine being asked not to use power between 4:30 p.m. and 6 p.m. You know, the kids come back from school, they want some, you know, afternoon tea, maybe play their video games before they do homework, or even do their homework by light. Maybe watch some TV, you gotta prepare dinner. What do? Can't turn the power on. Why? Because they don't have enough juice in the tank. My prediction for 2023 and 2024, candlelit dinners are going to be the thing. And not because they're romantic. And don't be surprised. We will see this in Australia soon. We're heading down a very similar path to our race for net zero as the UK is. They're just a few steps ahead of us. But it's only going to get worse and fast. Let's hop over to the other side of the Western global pond, to the US, and take a listen to a US congressman. His name is Tom McClintock, and he has spoken to the US Natural Resources Committee, suggesting that liberal policies on renewable energy are flawed. Now, remember, liberal is the Democratic Party in the US. So their Liberal Party is opposite to what our Liberal Party is here. So their Liberal Party is like our Labor Party.
Mr. Chairman, I simply want to implore you and your Democratic colleagues to reconsider the policies that you've been pursuing. On the one hand, you want to mandate not only electric cars, but industrial-scale backup batteries for wind and solar farms, all in the name of saving the planet. Yet on the other hand, you want to radically restrict mining, also in the name of saving the planet. Well, you can't do both. You've been moderately successful at mandating electric cars. The California bureaucrats have just imposed such a mandate on Californians over the next decade. About 3% of vehicle sales are now electric, so congratulations, only 97% more to go. And we don't need to get into a discussion today about where you think the electricity for your electric cars is going to come from. About 80% of our electricity still comes from the very fossil fuels that you're waging war against, and you're creating devastating shortages by doing that. We'll save that for another day. But let's just look at the mining requirements. In order to meet your electric car mandates, specifically a six-fold increase in demand over the next decade, we're gonna need 384 additional graphite, lithium, nickel, and cobalt mines by 2035, according to industry forecasts. Expensive recycling mandates will only reduce this number to 336 new mines that we're going to need. In fact, according to the International Energy Agency, an electric car requires 6 times the mineral inputs of a comparable internal combustion vehicle, 6 times the mining to produce a comparable car. And of course, copper is a critical component in this technology, and copper is what you're trying to shut down in the matter before us today. If it is your contention that the mining required to produce electric cars is a threat to the environment, then you are also admitting that the electric cars that require it are a threat to the environment. Can't you see how foolish and self-destructive and absurdly contradictory these policies have become? And can't you see yet the damage that you're doing not only to the environment, but to people's lives? As you make it harder and harder to mine the components to meet your mandates, the expense of those materials rises dramatically. We're already seeing that at the gas pump and in our utility bills. And it's not just electricity, it's everything these minerals could be used for if they were more efficiently applied. When something is scarce, it becomes expensive. You're making all of the things that we depend upon for our quality of life more scarce and therefore more expensive. You're fixated on a 1 degree rise of global temperatures over the next century, but you couldn't care less that you're making it financially impossible for many people to heat their homes in sub-freezing winters. Europe's now reverting to burning wood to survive this winter. This is not going to end well for humanity, And it's not going to end well for your party as more and more people connect the dots between your policies and the conditions that they're now suffering. You need to stop this. The resolution before us will at least shed some light on the inexplicably absurd decision that your administration made to unilaterally thwart a bipartisan legislative act and to impede one of the most important copper mines in America. And frankly, you need this information more than we do, because maybe it will dissuade you from continuing with the childish fantasies and the self-destructive policies that you are going to be held accountable for, both by voters and by history. I yield back.
Yeah, it was a bit long, but a great point. Let's look at electric vehicles, one of the issues that was raised in that, and how it's going to affect, what it's going to happen here in Australia. We're already seeing people having issues with recharging stations across the country. We're not pumping them out as fast as we need to. And the government is pushing to increase EV numbers, electric vehicle numbers, on the road to 3 in every 10 vehicles by 2030, with restrictions to be placed on the sale of petrol cars. And some reports indicating that after 2030, re-registering old petrol cars, like really old ones, won't be allowed. How will we power all of this when we don't have the electricity to turn the lights on? Do you ever get the feeling that this is all being rushed into? I do. We as a country are only a fraction over 1% of the globe's pollution problem. Of course we should do something to reduce our carbon footprint. I am not a carbon climate denier. But what I am not is a transition denialist. We need a better plan for transition, because at the moment it feels like the goalposts have been set and the game plan is, well, let's just hope it all works out in the end. That's the attitude I'm kind of feeling from those running the joint at the moment. Clearly evident in the report released by the University of New South Wales this week, the one that the ABC published, where it said Australia is adding renewable energy at less than half the pace required to replace retiring coal-fired generation. And let's be honest, the replacement is not as stable as coal-fired power is. What we need to do, and what we need to do, is have a serious conversation and ask ourselves, should we endanger the lives of our citizens here in Australia in the quest for going net zero? Because let's be honest, I get the feeling that this is all being done, the race to net zero is all being done isolated. So each country is doing their bit. So the UK is doing their bit. We're doing our bit. The US is doing their bit. But it's a global problem. If we get to net zero, doesn't mean we're not going to feel the effects of climate change here in Australia. What we should be doing is focusing on the countries who are producing the most and working with them as a global community to reduce their emissions, to get it down to our kinds of levels. That's where we should be having the race, not running as fast as we can to get our own country, who produces just over 1% of the world's pollution, to get us to zero. When you look at things like cost of living, cost of power, cost of transition, all of this is increasing. The people who can't afford it will be left behind. And we already see year on year reports of our elderly going cold in the winters to save money. And that was when power was cheap. What happens when the power is scarce and expensive? 101 basic economics. The less there is of something and the more demand there is for it, the price goes up. Are we ready as a nation to leave our vulnerable behind just to fix 1% of the problem? I'm not.
And it's all over, just like that.
And that's it. The Troy Murphy Show done and dusted for another week. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back next week from 6 p.m. for another edition of The Troy Murphy Show. If you miss any part of the show and want to listen back, head to the 2SSR.com.au website, find the program guide, click on The Troy Murphy Show, and listen back at your convenience. Coming up next, the encore broadcast of The Convo. Until next week, bye for now.